It's time for the Rink Rats. With your hosts, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats, Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger. We are both consuming Red Bull. If you hear that, Red Bull, we are currently awaiting sponsorship because we like your products. And we're really busy and we're really tired. And it's with you that we're able to get through this show. How you doing, bud?
Good. I've got two Red Bulls sitting here next to me, both open. That way I don't have to open the can live on Rink Rats. So
you think ahead.
Ready. Yep.
I like that. You're in a nice, shiny red Bauer hoodie.
I am.
Where'd you get that?
I got it at the Arsenal, located next to Toshiba Plaza. No.
Fuck off. That's awesome. We got to leave that in. Hopefully we can just get that, we sneak that through. I mean, if it worked for Sheriff Lawless, some guy named Dave, if they were able to sneak that one through, I think we're going to be able to sneak this one through, right?
They were.
Yeah. So, That's fantastic. I'm so happy we did that.
Yeah.
So the Golden Knights got trashed 8-2 in Edmonton. It was a really poor showing, probably their worst of the season. And they followed that up with a really big win against the Vancouver Canucks, another one of those divisional games. You got into it with Gerard Gallant a little bit about divisional games and whether or not they've got these circled on the calendar, if there's any extra preparation. The line about, is there any extra preparation for Connor McDavid? No extra time. That would have looked really good with a win, but it looks pretty bad with a loss, right?
Yeah, but I mean, that's just coach speak. I mean, when he said that, we all know that not true.
Yeah. I mean, it's a soundbite, right?
Yeah, especially with being in the division. I mean, you're spending more attention on your divisional opponents, period, because why would you scout Winnipeg the same amount of times you're going to scout Vancouver when you're going to play Vancouver six times and you're only going to play Winnipeg twice? So I don't doubt that that was just him telling us what he thinks we want to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But no, and I asked him, are divisional games more important? He said they are. And you can see why, how important they are, because how quickly things could have changed if the Golden Knights would have lost at Vancouver, because they had lost a bunch of games in a row on the road, but they hadn't fallen from that second spot in the standings in the Pacific,
right,
which is basically where they've been since the beginning of the season.
Yep.
They lose to Edmonton, and then my preview for the Vancouver game was basically, finally a game that means something.
Yeah.
Because if they would have lost that, and then, see, the thing is, they ended up winning, and then all the other teams in the Pacific lost. But if the Golden Knights had lost to Vancouver and Anaheim, Calgary, everyone would have won. The Golden Knights could have fallen from second to sixth in one game.
That's how quickly it can change, which is why it's so important not to leave points on the table when you go on a long road trip. We're talking about the New York Rangers game. We're talking about maybe the New York Islanders game, and then you don't start slow in Toronto. You don't start slow in Montreal. So that's why we harp as much as we do on full 60-minute effort. Because the only time this team ever gets in trouble is when they get away from their game for long stretches of time. Whether it be, and I'm gonna say 5 to 10 minutes of game time. And that's what we've seen. We've seen them get away from their game for 5 to 10 minutes. And in that time, because there is a talent discrepancy, other teams are able to take advantage of that in a way that the Golden Knights can't take advantage of that when they're playing their game for 5 to 10 minute stretches at a time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I thought they played pretty much a 60-minute game against Vancouver. Those two goals at the end of the second period for the Canucks it was kind of sloppy play by the Golden Knights, but not really. I don't think that they had that stretch where they didn't play well. And then they gave up those two goals, and they bounced right back and played well in the third period. I don't think it's the same as, like, the Rangers game, for example.
No, I don't think it was either. I really liked the effort in Vancouver. I thought the third period was probably one of their best third periods on the road so far this season. And it was all the stuff, all the things that impressed me about that win were everything that the Golden Knights did away from the puck. Like, I don't care about the goals. I mean, obviously, they're important. You got to score to win games. But, like, Jonathan Marchessault's play coming out of the penalty box to break up that Brock Besser wide open net, that's a huge play. And, like, we've seen Jonathan Marchessault not score goals and get frustrated and take bad penalties. the penalty that he took, it was a play. It happened. It wasn't a bad penalty. It wasn't a frustration penalty. But the way he came out of the penalty box, read the situation, saw what was happening, and was able to get his stick right there to break up that shot, that was huge.
I think that Vancouver game was massive for Jonathan Marchessault.
Yeah.
He's been in a little bit of a funk lately. He's had some opportunities that should have been goals. Everyone always keeps going back to that empty netter that he missed.
Mm-hmm.
But since that point, it's been in his head a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
He's missed some opportunities. He got that great defensive play that saved a goal. There's no way that's not a goal if Jonathan Marchessault doesn't block that shot with his stick.
Right.
The goal was wide open. So he gets that. Then, obviously, at the end of the game, they're up one. That was the dagger. They're up one. I would call it a steal, kind of. More like Vancouver just gave it to him.
Yeah.
But Vancouver turns it over in their own zone, and it's all Marchessault by himself with the goalie, which is an opportunity. It's just like all the other ones he had missed, and you just assume, oh, he'll miss it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he puts it 5-hole. And I think that could lead to a run. I kind of think a run for Marchessault is coming like the one we have been seeing from Carlson lately.
Yeah, I think so, too. With goal scorers, it's all about confidence. It's all about, and you know, if you're a goal scorer and you miss a wide open net, an empty netter, that's going to affect you. Whether you say it does or doesn't, it will. So the goal that he scored was nice. And then, again, away from the puck, the play that he made to ensure that an empty net goal was scored was huge. I mean, he hustled and skated his ass off to get that puck, to get it into a position for Riley Smith to tap it in. And that, again, you're up two. Like, you can apply some pressure, but you don't have to win that battle. I mean, you got to make it difficult on Vancouver to win it. But if you don't win it, it's not the end of the world, especially with how much time was left. But he was not going to lose that battle.
Yeah, and one thing that I noticed was that empty netter by Riley Smith was the third goal of the game out of four. Wait, they scored five, right?
Mm-hmm,
five. Okay, yeah. So third goal out of five that resulted from a battle won behind the net, because you've got that one that Marchessault wins the battle behind the net and kicks it out to Riley Smith, who puts it in the empty net. The James Neal stealing the puck behind the net, winning that battle, hitting it out to Perron, who sends it over to Holla, who puts it in the net.
Yep.
And Alex Tuck, who uses his arm to kind of guard the puck as he goes around the net and passes it out to, who did Tuck even pass it to? Was it Carlson?
Carlson, yeah.
Yeah, to Carlson, who kind of flips it up over the shoulder into the top of the net. So a lot of physical play from the Golden Knights, from a team that's not physical. That's not their strength.
No.
They can be, but this team is predicated on speed and talent and skill, not beating teams up. On Sunday, they play a team that is about beating teams up. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what's going to happen with the Los Angeles Kings. And obviously, this is going to come out after the Kings game. We are well aware of that, but we're going to talk about it anyway because it's important. And, you know, you can point back to this and tell us how wrong we were. But the Los Angeles Kings are hurting for a win right now. I mean, the records between the Golden Knights and the Los Angeles Kings are not very much different. The Kings have one more overtime loss than the Golden Knights, but everything else is pretty much exactly the same. And it's hard to believe that, seeing as the Kings were the last team in the league to lose a game in regulation. They got off to an incredibly hot start. But I think now you're starting to see where the loss of Jeff Carter starts to affect this team, because goals per game has drastically come back down. This team that was scoring 3.5-4 goals every single night, now they're scoring 2 to 2.5, maybe 3 if they're lucky. And Jonathan Quick can only do so much. And this is going to be a very interesting game, because I have no doubt the Los Angeles Kings are going to come out. They're going to try to beat the ever-loving crap out of the Golden Knights. And I think the Golden Knights are a faster team. They move their feet a lot quicker. They're better skating than the Los Angeles Kings. So if the Kings try to go out there and hit something they can't, if they try to hit something that moves and they move quicker, the Golden Knights should match up relatively well with the Los Angeles Kings, assuming they skate. If they don't skate, it's going to be a really long game.
It would worry me more if it was in LA that they're not going to skate.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember a game at T-Mobile that the Golden Knights didn't come out and play really well.
Right.
The only, I mean, they've lost only once there. It was the Detroit game, and that's obviously the concussion that Fleury suffered.
Right, right. And they didn't start poorly in that game. And,
no, they were up.
And they did go down, and then they bounced back, and they did go into the third with a lead. So even that game that they lost, they didn't start poorly, and they didn't really have a prolonged stretch of poor play until the third period, until Marc-Andre Fleury got hurt.
Yeah, recently the Kings have been living on Jonathan Quick, who, in my opinion, has been the second best goalie in the entire NHL this year.
And that's a dangerous thing, because at the beginning of the year, when Kopitar was going, when Brown was going, when everything was going, Kempe was chipping in, Pearson, Toffoli. I mean, that's a lot of talent. It really is with the Los Angeles Kings, but they were scoring a lot of goals. However, with John Stevens, and his system, they're not as good as they were defensively last year. So it's an over-reliance now on Jonathan Quick, where before it was, we know we're really good defensively, so we only have to score two goals. Now it's, we have to score three or more to win. And that's a new thing for the Los Angeles Kings. And when you go to the top two lines, they can probably get that done. But then you look at the bottom two lines, you look at the Trevor Lewis's and the Nick Shores, and it doesn't scream a team that can win games 4-3 or 3-2 even.
And we've talked about the Golden Knights having a huge advantage on third and fourth lines.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the case on Sunday when they play the Kings. There's no one on the third and fourth lines that matches up with guys like Tuck, Lindbergh, Belmar, Nosek, guys like that that have been playing really well lately, that have
mm-hmm.
been scoring.
Yeah.
The Kings don't really have that. They rely on those. They're really, really top heavy.
Yeah, absolutely. And that brings up an interesting argument. And I know that we're trying to figure out who may be in the lineup for Sunday, but what did you make of Brendan Leipsic against Vancouver?
I didn't notice Leipsic a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he played all that well, but Tuck had his best game in, I'd say, 4 or 5 games.
Mm-hmm.
He's been kind of in a slump lately. And all of a sudden, you put a speedy guy out there with him. And obviously, Carlson was out there because he got the goal mm-hmm. on Tuck's assist.
Yeah.
But that was like in the middle of a line change. Tuck likes playing with fast playmakers like that. They
mm-hmm.
need to put Eakin and, I'm blanking, who's the left winger on that line normally?
When it was Lindbergh.
Lindbergh, yeah.
Yep.
Eakin and Lindbergh are just two solid positional hockey players.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not fast and they don't make plays. Tuck needs to be surrounded by fast guys.
Yeah.
He said it. It's clear. Every time you put him out there with somebody like that, things happen.
He's noticeable. You see him.
So I don't think Leipsic played that well, but I think just his presence on the ice opened things up a little bit more for Tuck. And they just got to do something with that, whether it's Leipsic or whether it's moving Carlson down to that line with him or mm-hmm. just some, or moving Tuck up to one of the top two lines. I don't think they want to mess up Marchessault and Smith just because they've been playing together all year, basically.
Right.
But, yeah, so that was my assessment. I don't think Leipsic played that well, but I think it did good things for Tuck.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Leipsic had moments in the first period where he was pretty fast, and I noticed him, but I didn't really notice him much after the second and third period. However, what you said is absolutely true. If Brendan Leipsic playing with Alex Tuck awakens Alex Tuck and Alex Tuck plays the game the way that we all expect him to, then that needs to be a thing that happens consistently.
The Saad Tabes argument.
Yeah, absolutely. Which isn't really working that well right now for the Chicago Blackhawks, but it is an interesting case. And maybe it's not Leipsic. Maybe it's somebody else, like you said, Carlson or somebody else throughout the lineup that's faster, that can get in and hold on to the puck a little bit longer. Because that's the argument that I have, is Leipsic, when he does have the puck, you may not notice him starting a rush or on the rush or whatever it is, but what he does really well is he holds on to the puck and allows the guys around him to get into those areas where they can be effective. He draws coverage and then sends a puck that Alex Tuck can skate into and use his body and use his physicality. So I like Leipsic with Tuck. I think they've got decent chemistry. And like you said, Tuck has said multiple times, I like playing with guys that are fast because they do things that I can't do or things that I don't, things that don't suit my game. And then they get the puck to me where or to me when I can use my skills best. Mm-hmm. And it's finding that balance. But what I'm worried about is the fact that Will Carrier seems to be the guy that's going to draw out anytime Brendan Leipzig's in the lineup. And I don't know if Lindberg on the fourth line is the best application for him. I don't know if Eakin on the third line or even Eakin on the fourth line is better than Carrier on the fourth line. So yeah. There's just this whole bunch of stuff. And at the root of it all is where in the hell Cody Eakin fits on this team.
Yeah, he hasn't been playing well. He was one of the bright spots early in the season. Mm-hmm. I felt like he was almost carrying the line early in the season. He hasn't played well. And actually, Will Carrier is another guy that I think would do great with Alex Tuch on that third line. But mm-hmm. I didn't mention his name because I think that fourth line with Belmar, Carrier, and Nosek needs to remain how it is.
Like
that
line has constants.
Played really, really well.
Like right now, Neil, Perron, Haula, that needs to be a line that stays together for a long time.
Yeah.
Because every game, they seem to just find a little bit more chemistry. I mean, the pass that Perron made to Haula to set up that goal was just phenomenal. And I did you see James Neal's reaction?
No.
When he realized that Perron made the pass, he didn't shoot the puck, he was shocked. Like, he couldn't believe that play was made. And you're right. It started with a broken play. It started with Neal doing all the dirty work down low, throws the puck to an area, gets it to Perron. Perron has the ability to know where Eric Haula is. And he finds him, and it's no mistake. And that line needs to stay together. And then you look back at like the last three or four games, the best line on the ice every single game for the Golden Knights has been that fourth line. Because every time you throw them out over the boards, you know what you're going to get. They're on the right side of the puck. They make the right plays. Belmare had 2 goals in 3 games. I mean, the guy had 4 goals all last season. He had 2 and 3. There's something special with Belmare, Nosek, and Carrier. And I don't know why you go away from that.
Yeah, the thing is, you talk about the Haula, Neil, Perron line needs to stay together. But I don't know how long that line's going to stay together. I don't know how long those two guys are going to be on this team, man.
Let's not talk about that.
There's already Bob McKenzie said that George McPhee told him. Nice of McPhee to tell McKenzie and not me.
Hey,
or
you know,
anyone else in Vegas.
But get Canadian, Jesse.
Yeah. But apparently they're already fielding offers for Neal and Perron, which I'm not surprised.
No.
They're playing well. There are a lot of teams out there that could use guys like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think I could see them both getting traded. And like I've said it from the beginning, if you get a first-round pick, you take it.
Yeah.
Because the earlier you take it... Now, a team that is trading for James Neal is probably going to make the playoffs because teams that aren't going to make the playoffs aren't making moves like that.
No.
But there's a chance. If you do it early, that team could bomb out, not make the playoffs, and now you have 2 lottery tickets instead of just 1.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is assuming the Golden Knights miss the playoffs, which I am assuming.
Sure. Ooh.
If you wait until the trade deadline,
mm-hmm.
the team that trades for him is clearly making the playoffs. There's mm-hmm. no way that a team that isn't in the playoffs is going to trade for him. So you're getting a first round pick, but it's going to be a late first round pick.
Right.
It's all about getting those tickets to the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can trade James Neal, in my opinion, now you don't want to do it for nothing, but if you get a good offer, you do it as soon as you possibly can to try to get that lottery pick. And if there's teams out there already fielding offers, if McPhee's already taking phone calls, I don't know how much longer he'll be on this team.
So, yeah, I mean, I saw that. It makes me a little bit sad because here's what I think is going to happen. And not so much in the case of James Neal, but I think more in the case of David Perron. If a team out there offers you a first-round pick for David Perron.
Well, I don't think they're getting a first for Perron.
If they do, though, based on how he's played so far. I mean, you could argue that based on his play, his leadership, what he's done, he's leading the team in point scoring. Maybe there's a team out there that's looking for it. Maybe there's a team that sees that role for him and they're willing to give up. If you get a first for David Perron, I think you do it.
Oh, of course.
If you get a second, is it that automatic?
Oh, yes.
Is it really?
I think Perron is a third round pick guy.
Really?
But if someone told me now. If it's
are you basing that on his career? Are you basing that on what he's done?
The dude's bounced around and been on a trillion teams.
But he's coming into his own right now on this team. I think that you're going to get some GMs that are going to overreact. Let's be honest here. General managers in the NHL are not like the most qualified general managers in all of sports. Okay, Joe Sakic runs a freaking franchise. Like, let's be real. Okay?
That was a great trade by Joe Sakic.
Well, the verdict's still out. We don't know. We have no idea. What he's going to do.
Sakic will be my captain until the day I die.
Yeah, no, that's fine. You could love Joe Sakic the player, but you could be honest enough with yourself that Joe Sakic the GM is not very good.
Great trade.
Oh, yeah, it's a great trade if he drafts well. Yeah. Has he drafted particularly well?
Well,
okay. Why is that team still bad?
Well, the Avalanche have drafted a lot of good players, and they just haven't. Stasny, for example,
yeah.
Great draft pick. Mm-hmm. Stasny was good. They just didn't put the pieces around him in order to keep him long. Like Landeskog, mm-hmm. Great draft pick.
Good draft pick, yep.
Duchesne, great draft pick.
Yeah.
They can pick players. They just haven't gotten the role players, the guys that Jason from Sinbin loves so much.
Well, that's the problem, though. Your general manager has to recognize and find that.
Sakic obviously hasn't done a great job, but I don't think he's like the disaster that you.
No. Listen, he's probably not the worst general manager in the league. That would be a topic. We need to go through and try to figure out the worst general managers in the league.
The Coyotes are not doing great.
No, the Coyotes are awful. I think John Chyka, that's
who it is.
That's got to be on like the short list. But I think, you know, I don't know. I think if John Tavares is not a New York Islander, you got to, by this time next year, you've got to say Garth Snow is just an absolute disaster.
If they lose Tavares, that would be bad.
Yep. You know, because Tavares liked playing with Okposo, and you get rid of him. I don't know.
Anyways,
so that's something we can go into.
Later. I think if Perron gets a second round pick, you take it.
Mm-hmm. James Neal first round automatic.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Unless it's the James Neal thing is
tricky
because I think you are going to be able to get a first round pick from James Neal for most of the season. I'm not in these circles. I'm not in these talks. I don't know what is being offered, but I just feel like the way he's playing and the role he plays, which there are so many teams that just want a sniper.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, you can be a little more patient with him. You don't have to take a first the second someone offers it. If it's someone like that you know is going to make the playoffs, absolutely no chance. Like if the Washington Capitals were to offer you a first-round pick for James Neal, or
that would be the year they don't make the playoffs.
Or the Toronto Maple Leafs, or the Tampa Bay Lightning, a team that there's no way they're
possible.
I'm just throwing teams that you know for sure are going to be in the playoffs. Now, I don't know, the Calgary Flames were to offer you, will they make the playoffs? Yeah, they probably could, but there's also a chance that they don't. You take that first-round pick the second you get it offered because James Neal's gone at the end of this year. I don't think he's re-signing with the Golden Knights.
Yeah.
I don't think you sign that major deal.
Probably not.
So having that second shot at the lottery, you saw it with the Devils last year. You don't have to have a top three or four pick to get into that top three or four picks in the draft. Just get lottery tickets.
So how much of this has to do with, because you said you don't think the Golden Knights are going to make the playoffs, which is fine. I'm still out on that one. I don't know. I think that they're going to like be in the hunt until they're not in the hunt, and then when they're not, it's going to be just a fire sale. You know what I mean?
Well, the NHL is the way that the playoff bracket is set up. You're going to be in the hunt unless you're the freaking Coyotes.
They're still mathematically in it.
Like, okay, like the Avalanche from last year. Like even like the teams that were like picking fifth or sixth last year were in the hunt until the last month of the season.
Sure. But I think George McPhee is smart enough to be able to assess his team and see how things are going, and see like if he's 8 points back. You're still technically in the hunt, but that's a lot of ground to make up. Could you do it? Yeah. Could you get hot? Absolutely. But I think that there's going to be like this number where he's going to set an arbitrary date, whether it's beginning of the year, whether it's, you know, mid-January, whatever it is. And he's going to say, this team needs to be at this point value. And if they are not, we're sellers. If they are, we're going to let it ride. And I think he's going to set those dates throughout the remainder of the year. And then the minute that team doesn't meet that metric, it's George McPhee wheeling and dealing, doing what he needs to do to make sure that this team has the best chance at Rasmus Dahlin.
Yeah, see, I don't think it's... My thought process on it is a little different. I don't think he's got... I don't think his trading has anything to do with the record.
Really?
I think it's, to him, it's two completely different things. This team could be in first place in the Pacific Division a month from now. Someone, if the Calgary Flames offers a first-round pick for James Neal, a team that's in the division that could overtake you, gone.
Wow.
Don't even think twice about it. Gone. And the thing is, I don't think you trading James Neal automatically means
this team
you're not going to make the playoffs.
No, I agree with that.
I think if Neal and Perron are traded, is it going to hurt them? Obviously, they're not going to be quite as good of a team, but Alex Tuch now moves up into a first or second line role.
Yep.
You put Alex Tuch around guys like Haula or Carlson or I don't know, just any of the top two lines.
Yep.
Then a guy like Polkinen comes up from Chicago, or a guy like Hika comes up from Chicago, and all of a sudden maybe Hika is a great third line sniper.
Yeah, it's true. It's possible.
I don't think it's if you trade Neal, you're now tanking for number one for Dahlin.
Right. Now, let me ask you this then. When it comes to James Neal and David Perron, let's say that the Golden Knights trade both of those guys tomorrow. Do you think their chances of making the playoffs are the same without them as they are with them?
No, they're worse without
them. They're way worse?
Yeah, not way worse.
Significantly worse?
I think the team is not as good without those two guys.
All right.
I think that's safe to say. It's not. I mean, you replace those two on the lineup, like I said, Polkinen and Hika.
What about if Fleury comes back?
Well, with Fleury back, this team is significantly better. These goalies have played good, and everybody's like excited about Subban coming back, who it should be good.
Yeah,
with him coming back, the dude's got less wins than Lagasse and Dansk. I mean,
he's a big upgrade though.
Think Subban has much higher potential than those guys, and I think Subban's going to be a starter in the league for the next however long he plays. Mm-hmm. But right now, this isn't a huge upgrade of him coming back. When Fleury comes back, that's another story because he is so much better than all these other goalies. It's not even close.
So I guess in a roundabout way, what I'm trying to get at it here is if James Neal and David Perron are gone, then that's something the team can still figure out. They can still get players to jump in, fill in those spots. They're not going to be as dynamic. They're not going to be as good, but they still could be a team that does some damage. They're still going to be competitive. They're still going to skate, all that. But getting Fleury back and moving on from Perron and Neal, maybe that balances everything out.
And then you can trade Marc-Andre Fleury to the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Because God knows they need a goalie.
Hey, the Penguins would love to have Marc-Andre Fleury.
Matt Murray, what happened to him?
He actually made a really good save the other night.
He did, but he's not been as consistent as he was last year, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that the Penguins literally have no backup goalie.
Yeah, they're in trouble. I feel like they almost didn't think it was a big deal at all when they lost Fleury. I think the Pittsburgh Penguins severely underestimated how important he was for Matt Murray to have Fleury next to him. And I'm telling you right now, I could absolutely see a scenario where the Pittsburgh Penguins give a draft pick to the Golden Knights for Marc-Andre Fleury. So that would mean that they gave him a second-round pick to take Fleury.
Yep.
Then they would give them another draft pick to take him back. So you could just get two picks for basically nothing.
Why don't we just trade Fleury for Murray straight up?
Yeah.
Let's just do that.
I'm sure the Penguins would be thrilled for that. but no, and I know everyone that's listening to this is probably going to be pissed off that I'm just like saying trade every good player on the team. But... I know this season has been great, But that's why general managers are general managers mm-hmm. and fans are fans, because right. McPhee cannot get caught up in, oh yeah, let's make a run, because McPhee set out a plan mm-hmm. after 20 years of being in some sort of front office position in the NHL. The dude's been doing it forever.
Yep.
He has taken all of his experience and come to the conclusion that this is the best way to do this expansion.
Mm-hmm.
If he changes his mind after a month of hockey,
20 games, give or take,
he's no better than the guy yelling for Jágr.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you have to stick to your plan, and there's a reason he came to the conclusion that this is the way to do it. And he has said, McPhee has said, yeah, we could probably push for, if we want, like this is before the expansion draft even happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we could probably draft the best player on each team. We could probably push and make the playoffs, but then we'd suck the next 10 years.
Right.
You'd be the Florida Panthers.
Yeah.
And that could still happen if they don't trade these pieces when they have the opportunity, when you have all this chance to get young prospects, draft picks, all this stuff. Remember, they could have taken Matt Dumba
yeah.
instead of getting Alex Tuch. They could have taken any one of the blue liners for the Ducks mm-hmm. instead of taking Stoner and getting Shea Theodore. It's the same scenario now, and it's one of those scenarios where now we're all thanking him for taking Tuch and Theodore,
mm-hmm, yeah.
and a year from now, everyone will thank him for trading James Neal when they have Rasmus Dahlin.
No, I mean, you make a lot of sense. You do, and I like where you're going with it, and I even would argue that the start of this season is in line with what George McPhee wanted. I think that he wanted a team that would come out and be competitive and would perform as well as they've been performing, because it draws in new fans. It creates this buzz. It creates this excitement, not just here, but throughout the league. I mean, the Golden Knights are talked about on a lot of different hockey programs pretty much on a nightly basis. And that's a good thing. It's good for the organization. But it also helps temper those expectations when you do move pieces from this squad, because they start 10-6-1. Everyone thinks that they're going to the playoffs. You lose James Neal, you trade James Neal, you trade David Perron, you do something like that. And then when this team isn't as good as they've been, you can easily say, well, we got a first-round pick for this. He's a good player, and that's why it's going to be a little bit more of a struggle. And I think it kind of gives the players an out if they don't meet the start of the season. I would argue that George McPhee is never going to waver from his plan. We've seen him be as hard-nosed can be. All we got to do is talk about Vadim Shibachev. We know that that's the case. He just doesn't care about the players as, and I don't mean this generally, but he thinks of players as commodities, and that's what he has to do as a general manager. He needs to see what his assets are and figure out where he can best execute or put those pieces. And feelings don't really have any place in sport when it comes to general managers and players and how they assess their talent.
Yeah. And the quote that everyone keeps going back to from McPhee when they argue against what I'm saying
mm-hmm.
is, he said, he was asked, I forgot who asked him the question, but he was asked if he'll derail the season. And his quote was, no, I'm not going to derail this thing. I don't believe that at all, because when you ask a question like that, what is he supposed to say? Yeah, I'll derail it whenever I feel like it. Of course, he's not going to say that.
You could even argue that his answer was, I'm not going to derail my plans. Like, you're not incredibly specific.
Yeah.
Are you going to derail this team as they are right now? Are you going to derail the plan that you have to make this team a good team in 3 years and a great team in 6 years? I mean, it's open-ended. It's not a very good question, and it's a really easy answer for George McPhee. No, I'm not derailing anything. And you have no idea what he's answering that to. So, no, it makes a lot of sense. Let's shift gears and talk about Malcolm Subban.
Okay.
Because he's back.
Yep.
Do you expect him to start against the Kings?
Man, I'm just guessing, and everyone's going to know the answer to this by the time this podcast airs. So, mm-hmm. I was wrong. I think Subban starts.
Yeah, why do you think that?
He's been practicing with the team on the road trip. It wouldn't have surprised me if he would have started in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's pretty simple. He's healthy.
Yep.
He was above Lagasse on the start, on the depth chart when he was healthy. He's now healthy. He jumps back above him, and he starts. And I also think he's Dave Pryor's guy.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And Dave Pryor is the one making these decisions. Make no mistake about it.
Yep.
It's not George McPhee. It's not Gerard. It's definitely not Gerard Gallant. Dave Pryor, remember when he was hired, it was he was originally brought on as like we thought he was going to be like a consultant mm-hmm. to the team.
Mm-hmm.
Then he ended up being named goalie coach. But he's not, if you look at his title, he's not just goalie coach. He's director of goaltending. And when I talked to him for my Q&A, that was spectacular, not because I am a good writer. I had nothing to do with it.
It was all you,
Dave Pryor
talking
and me just typing out what he said. He said, I handpicked these guys mm-hmm. for certain traits. And we kind of speculated when it happened, when the whole Calvin Pickard waived, Malcolm Subban claimed thing happened, that Dave Pryor told McPhee, this guy could be our franchise goaltender.
Mm-hmm.
And after talking to Dave Pryor, I am almost positive that's exactly how it went. And I think Subban is Pryor's guy, and I think he's going to be given every chance to succeed.
What if Subban comes back, plays really well? Say he gets into, I don't know, 12, 13 games, wins 8 of them, has really good goals against average, really good save percentage. He's looking every bit like what Dave Pryor envisioned him to be. And then Marc-Andre Fleury gets healthy. What do you think? Do you think that Dave Pryor would ever entertain the idea of going to Subban more than he would go to Fleury?
No.
If Fleury is healthy?
No.
Why not?
Because Fleury's better.
Well, I know he's better.
And Pryor knows Fleury's better.
Okay.
And I think Pryor respects the hell out of Fleury.
Yeah.
And I think he would never do that. I think what happens is, in that scenario, if mm-hmm. Subban is like comes back, like because, I mean, the dude played like 2.5 games.
Yeah.
So it's tough to know if that was just fluky or if he's mm-hmm. really improved under Pryor.
Right.
If he comes back and proves that, wow, this guy is a completely different goalie than he was in Boston
mm-hmm.
and Providence, and he shows that he really is playing well, I think Fleury comes back, they do a 60-40 split until Fleury's traded.
Wow. So you think it's possible that if Subban is really good, if he's improved, if he gets better, if he gets hot, that makes shopping Marc-Andre Fleury almost a guarantee?
Not a guarantee, but I think teams want Fleury.
Yeah.
I think there are teams out. I know there are teams out there that need goalies.
Will Marc-Andre Fleury be a Golden Knight next year?
Oh man, it's so tough. I think yes.
Yeah.
I don't think Subban's going to come back and be amazing. I think he's going to be better than he was in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to make improvements, and I think long term Subban can be a really, really good goalie for this team. But I think when he comes back, I don't think it's going to be all right. Hand the keys to the team to this guy.
Okay. So the other question that I have then is this. We've seen Oscar Dansk, and we've seen Max Lagasse. We've seen arguably a lot more of Max Lagasse than we've seen of Oscar Dansk, but it was widely speculated that Dansk was probably in the 4 spot organizationally, and Lagasse was in the 3 spot organizationally. Do you think that that's changed, and do you think it'll change once they are both sent back down to the AHL? Do you think that Lagasse has shown enough to still be ahead of Dansk? Do you think Dansk has shown enough to be ahead of Lagasse? Where do you think that's going to go?
Well, that's up to Rocky Thompson down there in Chicago, and mm-hmm. I don't think it's important who's the number one in Chicago. I think they're probably both going to play a bunch of games down there,
yeah.
And I think it's just a matter of you play 3 in a row, then you play a couple in a row. Like I you don't want to go 1-1-1-1 because they can't get in a rhythm, but mm-hmm. that team is not about who's our number one goalie, so we can try to win a whatever the hell trophy they play for. They could literally go 0 and however many games they play in a season, and yep. I do not care at all.
Like okay.
Every game they lose, I don't care. It's all about developing players. So I think they should both play. I think they should both play about an equal number of games.
Mm-hmm.
As far as if they need to be called up to the Golden Knights again, who should get the call up first? I think it's Dansk. From watching 3 or 4 games of each, mm-hmm. we saw a little bit more of Lagasse, like you said. I think Dansk played significantly better. I think Lagasse had some moments,
yeah.
but he also had bad moments. And Dansk really didn't
No, he didn't. Dansk had like a couple of minutes at the beginning of games where he was struggling with rebound control and he just didn't look comfortable. But once those 3 or 4 minutes ticked off the clock, he settled into his rhythm and I think he was okay. And I was more impressed with Dansk than I was with Legasse, but I feel like you know, it's good that Legasse got the win in Vancouver, and it's good that he's picked up a couple of wins, because if he would have gone through this entire stretch and not won a game or not really had one of those games where he was very much a part of a win, I think it probably would have hurt his confidence going back down to the AHL. I wonder if he's going to use this as extra motivation to get back here, because the way that a lot of people have talked about Max Legasse is once Subban and Dansk get healthy, he's just going to be an afterthought. And I don't know that that's fair, because he's still a relatively young guy. He still has room to grow. He can get better. But I feel like, and I believe it was Gary Lawless that said it, you know, he's aware of the situation. He knows that his time is pretty much going to be marked and done as soon as Dansk and Subban can return to the lineup. And who knows when he's going to get back here. And I don't know that that's the fair thing to say, because he's got a lot of experience. He learned a lot through this. I don't want to see that mindset being applied to one of your young players. You know what I mean?
I think if you're Legasse and Dansk, because I think they're both about in the same place. As soon as Subban and Fleury come back, they will no longer be in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing they can do. No matter how well they play, no matter how bad Subban or Fleury plays when they come back, there's mm-hmm. nothing other than injury that can make Dansk or Legasse NHL players once those two come back. But that doesn't mean you're not part of this franchise mm-hmm. going forward. This team is going to be – the roster for the Golden Knights is going to be in flux like no roster in the history of the NHL over the next year, 2 years, 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So any player in this organization, that's why guys like Hika, Polkinen, Thompson, guys like that that played well in preseason that were sent down to Chicago, you got to keep kicking ass down there, because mm-hmm. yeah. this team is going to lose probably 60% of its players in the offseason.
Right.
And they're going to bring other guys in. They're not just going to replace them with all the Chicago guys. But if you're a guy in Chicago, you're thinking, I can take one of those spots. You have to. And they could lose 3 or 4 guys through trade or injury this year, and you can be brought up. All these guys that get sent down to Chicago, including the goalies, need to think long-term. This I need to prove that I can be a long-term piece for this team. That's right. What every young player on this team, whether it's the guys in Chicago or the guys that have been brought up like Tuck and Theodore, you need to prove that you are a building block for this team going forward. And I think Dansk could not have made a better case.
Mm-hmm.
Because before this season started, when it was Pickard and Fleury, we thought there are two goalies, Pickard and Fleury, and then after that, that's it. That's the whole goaltending depth of this organization. Mm-hmm. Nobody even mentioned Dansk or Legasse. Now, all of a sudden, when those guys go back to Chicago, the narrative has changed.
Yep.
Now you know we've got some solid guys in goal down in Chicago, and say Fleury, let's say Fleury isn't traded, but he just retires after a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
Subban becomes the guy, and we don't have to draft a goaltender in the first round. You could, but you don't have to.
Right.
Especially if Dave Pryor likes what he's seen in Dansk and Legasse, and they've made cases to be a part of the future of this team.
No, I agree. John Merrill is still a part of this team.
Ugh. Sorry, John. I like John. I like John. He's a good dude. Just don't like him on the ice in place of Shea Theodore. And the thing is, this team—that's something we haven't touched on at mm-hmm. all in this podcast.
Yep.
How ridiculously lucky is this team in terms of injuries?
Sabiza is like the greatest thing that's ever happened.
Now, goaltending obviously is they're the most unlucky team in the history of the NHL when it comes to goaltending injuries. But aside from goaltenders who usually don't get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
The Golden Knights probably have the healthiest 23-man roster in the entire NHL.
Yeah, probably.
Spezza missing day-to-day with soreness, mm-hmm. which I have no idea what that is, but
I have no idea. He's day-to-day, but now he's on IR. So
Well, the way
could he
works.
Could he be back for Sunday? Yes, he could. Yeah. Will he? I don't know. But you look at Shea Theodore, and I want to talk about him before we get out of here. What's the plan with Shea Theodore? Because I don't understand what the plan is. I don't think that what we've seen is fair to Shea Theodore. And I'm gonna explain it in this way. When George McPhee talked to us to get rid of all the Vadim Shipishov questions, all that stuff, he made a comment about Shea Theodore in which he said he hasn't gotten the chance to get better with this team over the course of the first 6 weeks of the season. And then you bring him up and then you sit him in the press box more than you play him. How is he supposed to get better with this team watching the game?
It's beyond frustrating.
I don't get it.
It makes no sense. It does you no good.
No.
To start John Merrill in place of Shea Theodore. It does the franchise no good tonight. Mm-hmm. It does it no good tomorrow. It does it no good 3 years from now. It makes no sense. There's absolutely no reason to do it.
Yeah, no, I honestly don't understand. And I feel like the only way Shea Theodore is going to play two consecutive games is if Lucas Spezza is still out of the lineup. Because when Lucas Spezza comes back, you know they're going to put Schmidt with Spezza, which is fine. That's a great pairing. I like that. But they're not going to break up McNabb and Englund. In spite of the fact that they looked pretty good with McNabb and Englund not playing together in Vancouver, and you would think that that would spark something to say, oh, man, you know, Shea Theodore, he played pretty well with Derek Englund. Derek Englund is they were able to get the puck out of their zone a lot easier against Vancouver. They weren't defending the entire game. I would look at that scenario, and I would say, Shea Theodore needs to be in the lineup every single night.
I think it's interesting that they have no problem mixing up all the forward lines. They're continually shifting them, moving guys around. Eakin has moved from the Perron Neal line down to the Tuck Lindbergh line. Yeah. They've moved guys, and yet the defensive pairings, they won't touch them.
Well, that's the thing, because we talked about Carrier, Nosek, and Bellemare. Not only are they willing to move around the forwards, but they're willing to take one of the most consistent lines and continue to pluck one player out of the line that arguably is the spark plug for that line, and then the line is a spark plug for the team. But a defensive pairing that doesn't work with McNabb and Englund, and it's not because they're both poor defensemen. That's not the case. They just don't work very well together. Now, I know that it's probably more McNabb than it is Englund that I'm specifically complaining about. Because while McNabb is physical and while he's younger, he jumps out of position to make hits that he doesn't need to make. He takes bad penalties at crucial times in a game. And he played with Drew Doughty before playing with Derek Englund. I'm sorry. You want McNabb to be a good defenseman? You need to play him with a guy that plays the game like Drew Doughty. And that's a lot closer to Shea Theodore or a lot closer to Colin Miller than it is Derek Englund. Like, if you're trying to figure out what works best for Alex Tuck, you need to be figuring out what works best for Braden McNabb, for Shea Theodore. And then you've got to pair those guys with the guys that make sense. McNabb and Englund doesn't make sense. And Shea Theodore sitting in the press box makes less sense than anything I've ever seen.
Yeah, Shea Theodore needs to be in the lineup every single night. And he played his best game in Vancouver. That's the best game he's played since he came back. He didn't get on the box score sheet, whatever.
All of those things?
He didn't get on any of that.
None of it.
But he played well. He got a few of those stretch passes that he's known for.
Yep.
The one thing is, did the Golden Knights even have a power play in that game?
No, zero.
Yeah, I didn't think so. So that's somewhere that you'd like to see him. I want to see him on the power play as much as possible because he captained that Ducks power play in the playoffs, and I think he is absolutely that guy going forward for the Golden Knights.
Yep.
And like we said before, you can have – I hate the 4-1
I do
power
too.
Play, the four forwards, one defenseman. I hate it. And when you have Shea Theodore out there, you can now do both. You can now have two defenders on both power play units, which is, in my opinion, the best
without sacrificing offensive firepower.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I agree. We'll see what happens with the LA game, because I would argue that even if Spezza is healthy, Shea Theodore needs to be in the lineup over a guy like Braden McNabb. But Braden McNabb will be in the lineup because it's the Kings, it's the former team. We already know how that's going to go, and I don't think they're going to scratch Derek Englund at home. So you know McNabb and Englund are going to play, and if Spezza is back, you can't break up Colin Miller and Brad Hunt, but if you did, you're going to take Hunt out of the lineup. So Theodore, if he plays and Spezza is healthy, it's going to be because Brad Hunt isn't playing,
yep.
And I don't know that that's the right move to make either. But for a team like Los Angeles that is going to try to chip pucks in and beat the crap out of you, you need a defenseman on every single pairing that can get the puck, slip the coverage, and get and skate it out. If you don't do that, you're going to see a very difficult game for McNabb and Englund if they are playing together. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah. Just how exciting is it that there's a game, a hockey game in Las Vegas, a month and a half into the season, where you're battling who will eventually be your rival for first place in the Pacific Division? How awesome is that?
It's really cool. I mean, this is one of those games, right, where if this team doesn't make the playoffs, you can sit back and you can look throughout the season at like the important games. Obviously, the Dallas game, first game ever, was a big game. First home game against Arizona was a big game. This right here is a big game, because if you win this game in regulation, you, depending on what the Kings do tonight, but you could jump, you could leapfrog the Kings, you could get into a situation where you are top dog, and you did it by beating the second or first best team in the division. And whether or not the rest of the season goes downhill, whether it stays the same and you make the playoffs and you go on a mini run, you still have these moments where this hostile crowd is going to come into your building, because the Kings have been very prevalent in Las Vegas for a very, very long time, going back to Frozen Furies and all that. It's going to be a sick atmosphere on Sunday.
Yes, and I realize that this is going to air after the game, but I think this may be the Golden Knights' first chippy game of the year. There has not been a game where there have been multiple fights, where there have been like dust-ups after. You know, there are some games where there might not even be a fight all game, but after every play, there's a scrum. There's guys grabbing each other. There's, as you're skating to your bench, you're talking to the other bench. I think this could be the first one. And I know we're trying to, like, it feels like we're pushing this rivalry on them, but I talked to Nate Schmidt. This weekend, the Sunday Magazine, our sports story is rivalries. Okay. And the reason we're doing it this week is because the Fremont Cannon is up for grabs, UNLV in Reno, and it's the most important cannon game in the history of their rivalry. Then so our football writer, Mike Grimala, did that story on that rivalry, and then Ray Brewer did a story on the high school rivalries, Rancho and Vegas, all that. I have to do a Golden Knights rivalry story, but we don't have one.
It's not Arizona.
So I went up to Nate Schmidt, and I asked him, and without hesitation, he goes, it'll probably be the Kings.
Absolutely.
And the fact that the players think that also, it's kind of in your head. And I think if the Kings come into this building and they got all these Kings fans, which has happened with almost every game, the Winnipeg fans were crazy loud. Yeah. I think it's going to get a little hostile, and I think these guys are going to get chippy with each other. This could be the closest thing to playoff hockey that the Golden Knights have felt. I'm excited for this game on Sunday.
I agree with you. I think that we're going to see two games in a row that are going to be chippy. I think the Kings game is going to be chippy. I think there probably will be a few dust-ups, a few fights, because Derek Englund has had one fight this entire season, and it was a preseason game against the LA Kings, and he fought McDermott after a high hit. So I think that the precedence is already there, even from the preseason. And then I think they're going to go into Anaheim.
Which I'll be there.
Look at you.
Yeah.
Look at you. Just making the trip.
Yep. Be in Anaheim.
And it's not going to affect your Thanksgiving plans, is it?
What Thanksgiving plan? I don't have any Thanksgiving plans.
Awesome. To be honest. So Jesse Granger, he does everything for hockey. It's great. But I think they're going to go into Anaheim. And I think Anaheim is just that team that wants to be chippy with everybody. And I think if the Golden Knights can start fast in Anaheim, that's going to just piss the Ducks off. And Corey Perry is Corey Perry. You know what I mean? Hold on. This is actually really funny. So I was asked the other day about Matthew Tkachuk and where he ranks right now among all pests in the NHL. Yeah. And now, like, for me, right, there's a difference between a pest and a goon. Like, a pest needs to be a decent enough hockey player to, like, survive on just his ability to play hockey. You know what I mean? Like, Brad Marchand is a pest because he is a really good hockey player.
He's almost so good that he almost can get out.
Doesn't have to be one.
I almost don't consider him a pest because he's just so good. He's just a really good hockey player that's also an asshole.
Yeah. No. Listen, you're absolutely right. I mean, Brad Marchand is he doesn't need to be a psychopath, but he is. He really is. And so, like, Brad Marchand is probably the pinnacle of the pest because he can score goals, he can beat you in so many different ways, and he will still slew-foot you because he's that much of a jackass. He really is. Now, Matthew Tkachuk is slowly getting there because he's a good hockey player. He's not as offensively gifted as Brad Marchand, but he, I would argue, is probably more of that chippy jackass on the ice. Alexander Burrows was a pest for a while. Antoine Roussel with the Dallas Stars is a pest. Dustin Byfuglien would be a pest on the defensive end. But, you know, I was sitting there and I was thinking about it, and I'm like, you know what? I can't even put Corey Perry into the pest category anymore because the guy doesn't score enough goals and he's not offensive enough to affect you in any other way but being a jackass. That's just what he is.
So he's a goon now?
And like I explained, there's a difference between a pest and a goon. Like, mm-hmm. Tom Wilson, goon, right? Radko Gudas, goon.
Yeah, he's just got a goon name.
Yeah, Luke Witkowski, goon. And if you don't know Luke Witkowski, look him up and tell me that his profile picture as a player is not goon material. It is everything about that guy and his face is goon. It's great. But that's the difference. You have to have some ability to play to be a pest. So
who's the biggest goon of all time?
Biggest goon of all time. Man, that's tough. Like, I would say Marty McSorley. Marty McSorley, mainly because he was only good because of who he played with.
Yeah.
Like, Marty McSorley with anybody else would have just been atrocious. You know what I mean? Like, you play with Wayne Gretzky, you're going to be a 25, 30 goal guy. It happens by osmosis. But I would say Marty McSorley, and then I half jokingly wanted to throw a goalie your way. I want to say Ron Hextall.
Okay, I like that. I like that. As an Avalanche fan, it's Todd Bertuzzi. Not even close.
Well, Todd Bertuzzi is a felon in my eyes. Like, he's not even in goon material. Yeah. Like, he is just. Okay, it should not surprise anybody that the NHL and the Department of Player Safety don't really do everything that they can be doing to help players with concussions when you look at Todd Bertuzzi and what he did, and then you sit back and you think, oh, wait, he wasn't banned from this sport forever. He sat out the remainder of the season and then played the next year. Like, I don't even understand how that's a thing that ever happened in the NHL, and it makes me sick that it did.
Agreed.
Yeah. Claude Lemieux, though.
He was a good guy.
He was a pretty...
But
he was a pest more, right?
He was good. I didn't get to watch him all that much because that was a little before my time. He was part of the 95 Stanley Cup for the Avs, and I was like, I was five then, so like I didn't know what I was watching.
That was the year I think that Darren McCarty was like, I can't believe I shook that piece of garbage's hand after the game. Yeah, no, it's good. So I think we're gonna end on this. Looking forward to the Kings game. Looking forward to next week. We'll be back with you the following Monday with another episode. And I think what we might do is we might take a look. This pest goon stuff is pretty interesting. Maybe we can look at all 30 teams or all 31 teams now and see who has been the most effective pest and goon for each franchise. Maybe we'll do that. Maybe we won't. We'll see what happens. But we will be back with you next week. Jesse, where can people find you?
At JesseGranger_ on Twitter and at LasVegasSun.com.
All right. I am Ryan the Hockey Guy. You can find me on Twitter at RyanHockeyGuy. Until next week, we will talk to you. Thanks.